The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Ray Bodwell. Special thanks to Eric Tegadoff, Alex Gonzalez, Brian Bull, Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and Mark Moran. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Eliza Yurkov.
And I'm Josh Salem. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in Depth.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You are listening to KBOO News in Depth. I'm Althea Billings. I'm here with Kay Rambo, editor-in-chief at Street Roots, and Jeremiah Hayden, reporter at Street Roots, to talk about their new three-part story, The Great Portland Crime Ripple. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you for being here. So let's start in part one of your coverage, which is titled The Facts of the Matter. This piece examines, let's say, the crime wave that wasn't. We'll talk about what the data shows about the crime wave or lack thereof, but I want to get up to speed on the narrative around crime in Portland. What has that been like over the past 4 years?
Well, I think, you know, kind of the prevailing narrative in the public is, and I think from city officials as well, is that crime is going up, right? I think that there is, there are a lot of concerns about the frequency of crime, the severity of crime in Portland. And, you know, I think just kind of this general sense that Portland has become a very dangerous place and is experiencing a really significant surge in crime.
Well, your piece interrogates that. What are some of the ways to analyze a crime wave?
Yeah, that's, I think a much more complex question than we maybe initially realized when we first set out to do this story. But, you know, there are a number of data sources that you can look at. We looked at pretty much everything that was available to us, including reported crimes data from PBB, which is kind of the only data source we looked at that isn't just raw data. That's something that, you know, the police bureau kind of compiles and analyzes themselves. We looked at the number of calls, both emergency and non-emergency, resulting in police dispatch. We looked at arrests. We looked at the total volume of calls to the Bureau of Emergency Communications and, you know, did our best to really address that question of whether or not crime is going up in Portland over the last 4 years.
What were some of your findings?
You know, I think there are some things that are going to be really surprising to people, like the number of arrests per year on average has gone down by about 44% over the last 4 years, which very, very much so kind of outpaces any decrease in police officers or anything like that. The number of calls to the Bureau of Emergency Communications, both emergency and non-emergency, resulting in police dispatch have gone down about 10 to 11% over the last 4 years. You know, things like shoplifting arrests have gone down over 67% over the last 4 years. And I think really, you know, the only data source we found that really indicated that there's been any really notable increase in crime overall is PPB's reported crime statistics, which are, you know, they include unverified reports of crime. And even then, the less than 10% increase over the last 4 years is very, very much so largely attributed to a really sharp increase in the reports of vandalism, as well as a lot more reports of vehicle thefts. Well, I mean, I say a lot, but it's, you know, around 1,200. So yeah, it's. I would say that the data indicates there has not been a massive crime wave in Portland.
To dig into that a little bit further, you devote a whole section to talking about the calls in the narrative around the Bureau of Emergency Communications, and a certain City Commissioner Rene Gonzalez had a claim that was out there that the Bureau of Emergency Communications was being overwhelmed because of a crime wave. What were you able to figure out about what was really going on there?
Right. This is sort of a common thing where people can sort of cherry pick, you know, certain aspects of, you know, how crime is reported and how internal agencies report that data to sort of fit a narrative. So he's Commissioner Gonzalez, as you mentioned, he's the commissioner who was in charge of the BOAC until July 1st. And, you know, he's mentioned in the press to the television news particularly, saying that the dispatchers experienced a 35% increase in workload in the first 6 months of 2023 compared to the first 6 months of 2018. So there's kind of the thing behind that where it's like, why 2023 and 2018 is sort of random. And it does, that would support the idea, you know, without any further criticism, that we're in this massive crime wave and that's why all of these calls are going up. He blames, you know, crime, heavy drug use, lack of collective public health continues to create these roadblocks. There's sort of this mixture of fact and fiction there. When you compare those, you know, 2018 to 2023, the staffing was 13% lower in 2023, but the average call volume was just 2% higher. So it is true that those calls, you know, increased by 18%, but there's no real data supporting the claim that it's crime related and that it went up, you know, 35% within that time frame. He's made other similar arguments, particularly to the television news, and sort of cherry-picked data, saying, you know, but really the call volume is 6% higher in the first 6 months of 2023 compared to 2019. So this is kind of like some of the point of our research and article here is that just cherry picking, you know, one of the people that we talked to, a PSU researcher, Melissa Thompson, was saying, like, anytime you kind of see these short-term cherry-picked data points, you know, you should have a critical eye for that.
There's a rather striking quote from this first article from PSU sociology professor Aaron Roussel, who says, quote, "I can't emphasize this enough, that the word crime doesn't describe anything," end quote. Help me break this down. What does Roussel mean here?
Yeah, I mean, I think that that is kind of somewhat of a philosophical question that we ran into, which, you know, is can be kind of tough to square with a story. I mean, three stories that are really mostly about data. But I think the argument that we got from two of the academics we spoke to is that, you know, crime itself is kind of this shaky concept where, you know, I think the public generally understands it as this approximation of harm being done in a community. But there's also kind of a lot of things that take place that aren't considered to be a crime, but I think you could absolutely argue they harm somebody. And I think also the flip side of that is there are a lot of things that are considered criminal that probably, you know, aren't really affecting kind of the moral fabric of society. So, you know, crime statistics themselves are produced, maintained, and published by police largely, who themselves do have, you know, an interest often in those statistics reflecting one narrative or another. Whether or not, you know, that's happening in this case, I think there's no evidence for that. I think just in general, experts we spoke to kind of were encouraging a little bit more scrutiny for statistics like this. And I think what the evidence does show is that the narratives that we've been getting from police and from officials are not supported by their data.
Well, the second part of your coverage of the Great Portland Crime Ripple is called Budgets and Bodies. This looks at the Portland Police Bureau's budget, staffing, and reputation and stacks that up against this lack of a crime wave. What are some of the things to know about the police's relationship to crime?
One of the things that we talked about with Chris Henning, who's a criminology professor at Portland State, was this kind of idea of proactive policing versus reactive policing. And there's really no consensus from academia on this, although since the 70s it has been a bit unpopular to talk about proactive policing, in part because that is, you know, sort of a broader umbrella term for, you know, things like stop and frisk policies. That is a kind of, you know, pulling people over for having broken taillights and then searching for weapons or drugs, you know, things that kind of come out of a much smaller offense. Those are exactly the things that lead to racial disparities in policing. And so proactive policing is something that the public and sort of, you know, through this sort of recent revelation after the police officer murdered George Floyd, people in communities across America have really tried to get away from proactive policing by recognizing that that the outcomes are not particularly great for certain demographics. There, the argument from Henning, again, the professor, is that that may be some kind of trade-off, because according to him, there is evidence that proactive policing can help stop crime before it happens. The other version of this is this reactive policing, which is essentially just responding to calls, whether that's somebody coming up to a police officer on the street and saying, hey, I saw somebody over here, this is what's happening, or something, you know, like dispatch calls. Oregon, Portland, and sort of nationally has kind of turned toward reactive policing instead. And so it kind of fits the police narrative to say that the crime is way up because A, people don't like us, B, we don't have the budgets, and so we're not able to go out and stop crime before it happens, and that's why you see this big crime wave. Again, our reporting doesn't demonstrate any sort of significant crime wave at all. And also, the idea of the police budgets, you know, is another piece of that. There may be an interest from police departments to get money to continue doing their practices. The police budget now, again, I don't know how many times you can say this, the Portland Police Bureau was never defunded. It's been up from about $208 million in 2016 to $295 million this year. And, you know, and then policing, the actual police officer rates, appears to have very little to do with their budget. So their own kind of, whether if they have staffing issues, another thing that kind of comes up frequently, maybe sort of an internal HR thing for them to deal with, but it is not based on the fact that they don't have enough money. There was a brief dip, just to be clear, right around in 2020, and that was consistent with across the board 4.8% basically budget cuts.
So just to I guess belabor the point, the police having more money doesn't relate to this being a crime ripple, as you say.
There's really no evidence here that the funding or this supposed defunding, to say defunded is false, does not appear to really correlate with any data points that we found through looking at, you know, at the much deeper kind of raw data here. And there's certainly nothing to show that there's a causal relationship there either.
Yeah, well, and you know, I think the other piece of that, I think, that gets brought up with funding, like Jeremiah said, is staffing, right? We've heard a lot about how PPB is understaffed. Currently, they have 7% fewer police officers than they did in 2016. That, you know, shortage has been as much as 20% below previous staffing levels since 2020, according to PPB, depending on the month and year that the figure was collected in. Even still, there isn't really, I mean, there's no correlation in the data between, you know, the current staffing levels and the amount of alleged crimes happening, the amount of arrests, the amount of calls. And, you know, from talking with experts, you know, particularly Roussel and Thompson, it was clearly a theme that there is no really solid body of evidence indicating that more police means less crime. There's not a very direct relationship there between police staffing and the amount of crime. And like Jeremiah said, it's because police don't really prevent crime. Fundamentally, they respond to crime, which, you know, according to Thompson, I mean, if the goal is for police to prevent crime, then the goal is a police state, right? Because in order to have enough police to prevent crime, you have to have this kind of, you know, omnipotent police force that is everywhere you look, monitoring people's daily lives. And I think it's become a much more kind of accepted turn in criminology and sociology to instead look towards the actual causes of crime, which are not enough police, but rather, you know, this kind of complex mixture of economics, social status, government problems, like systemic issues generally, and this kind of confluence. And of course, like, social and familial things are wrapped up in that. It's a very complex thing, but nowhere in there is not enough police, right? So that, and the data certainly indicates that as well, that, to the extent that there was an increase in crime in Portland, which, again, not a whole lot of evidence to support that, plenty of evidence, I think, going in the other direction, staffing at PCB was not the cause of increased crime.
If you're just tuning in, this is KBOO News in Depth. I'm Althea Billings. I'm speaking with Street Roots Editor-in-Chief Kay Rambo and Street Roots reporter Jeremiah Hayden about a trio of stories they published this week called The Great Portland Crime Ripple. Let's get back to it. Can you talk a little bit about what isn't in this crime rate? Roussel, one of the professors you spoke to, underscored the significance of state violence sort of being outside of what we think of as crime and crime statistics.
Right. This is a really interesting point because if you look into this data, there are no, it just does not include things that police do that actually cause harm in the community. And that's something that Roussel talked about a lot, is for judging certain things that are sort of these social constructs of what crime is by definition. That can be one thing, but if you start looking at harms created in a society and then included the harms that police can cause for communities, those are very different numbers. And so we don't include in this data, there's no police shootings included in here. It doesn't talk about if a homeless resident in Portland is swept and their medications or their personal belongings are taken by the police, that doesn't fall under the larceny charges here in this data. And so that's kind of another example of the way that the police are able to control this narrative, kind of, going in and going out. If those things were to be included, these numbers would probably look quite different. But there may be a reason that they're not included in there.
Well, the final part of this triumvirate of articles is called If It Bleeds, It Leads. Kay, you wrote this one solo. What part does the media have to play in this perception of a crime wave that defies the data, as you guys have talked about?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think, we certainly didn't set out, I think, to write anything about the media writ large. I think, what happened was the more we spoke with people and the more we asked about, doing our due diligence, making sure that our data, was accurate and lined up with what professional researchers were doing and seeing themselves, we kind of kept arriving at the same question of, well, how do you have, no data really to support this idea that there's this huge increase in crime? But I think, you can look at any public opinion poll in the last several years in Portland asking people what they're most concerned about. Crime and public safety, along with homelessness, are, that's often the one and two. Maybe housing is in there, right? But crime is something that people are really concerned about in Portland. And so through that process, we just heard more and more about how much of a role the media can play in that. And Melissa Thompson, one of the criminologists we interviewed, is also an expert in the media, the representation of crime in media, and actually teaching a class about it. Roussel spoke about it at length too, but basically, the idea is that the more serious a crime is, the more violent it is, the more likely it is to be the lead story. And that's, there's some validity to that, right? People are most concerned about those types of crimes. So it makes sense that media outlets would often lead with them. At the same time, when that is presented without full context, it begins to convince people that crime is much more prevalent than it actually is. And that's something that Thompson talked about over the last, you know, couple of decades, a few decades really. Crime has been decreasing a lot in Portland, very substantially, throughout the country as well. But in that same time period, there's this inverse relationship where crime is going down steadily, and yet media coverage of crime is going up steadily at the same time. So you end up with this kind of strange contradiction that ultimately, I think, leads to public perception being something that doesn't line up with the data, because, you know, that broader context is typically not being included with those reports.
If I can add to that too, there's a piece of this where if the police are kind of controlling the data and then controlling the narrative and the media, often one of the things that Thompson talked about is the media, you know, for various reasons, not having time, short deadlines, you know, a person who's been under arrest is very difficult to get a hold of to hear their kind of story. But like police and crime reporting is kind of this one place in media world where you can simply write "police say" and then copy what they say in the press release and call it good journalism. And that's kind of a special thing here. And that kind of raises eyebrows anytime, you know, you might read a article that says "police say this." Doesn't necessarily mean that it's the straight story, you know, and doesn't have multiple perspectives in that. The second thing is that, you know, Portland Police Chief Bob Day, when he was instated as the chief a few months ago, talked about his role, seeing his role as being reducing crime and the fear of crime. And so it kind of raises this question, as police control the narrative, often through the media, through sending, you know, press releases out and through contacts with the media to say, here's what's going on with crime in the city. It kind of raises an interesting question about how the chief feels that he could actually reduce fear of crime, and that he sees that as something that is his responsibility within that job description.
Speaking specifically of Bob Day, and I think media coverage, you know, one of the things that we looked at in part one that I think is, you know, relevant to part three is you know, a January press conference, the same one that Jeremiah is describing, where, you know, Bob Day brought up a reported 88% increase in shoplifting last year, right? Now, when you look at the data, larcenies last year were at an 8-year low. So over the last 8 years, the number of reported thefts was lower than it was in any other year. Arrests for shoplifting are down over the last 4 years by almost 67% compared to the four years preceding the pandemic. So, you know, I mean, the data that we had didn't really indicate that there was that 88% increase in reported shoplifting. And this is all, I think, you know, importantly, kind of on this backdrop of PPB becoming very publicly vocal about retail theft, you know, dedicating specific retail theft missions where they're partnering with private businesses to do loss prevention work. And even with that, you know, the number of shoplifting arrests are way lower than they were before the pandemic. So, and, you know, when we contacted PPB and say, hey, this is your data, this is what it indicates to us, where's your sourcing for this 88% increase? We were told that Chief Day was on vacation and that they couldn't provide us with the source for that 88% increase. You know, which is really just to say, I think that there are, you know, I think how the Bureau comes up with reported crimes is not terribly transparent. We could not get an answer from them for how that number is compiled. But, you know, that is obviously a shocking statistic. So, of course, it was, I mean, there are numerous news outlets in Portland that ran with that headline that kind of made it to the national circuit as well. But then when you step back and look at the data, I mean, there's nothing available to actually support that statement. Which I think is just kind of part of this broader issue with, you know, really one-sided sourcing. And I think, you know, time constraints, staffing restraints in newsrooms, it's not terribly feasible that everything the police say is going to go through the type of fact-checking that we were able to dedicate to all of this, you know, through three articles.
Well, on this point of perception, I want to know, how does everyone that you talked to and everything that you reported on, how does this relate to the homelessness crisis on Portland streets?
This is a really interesting point because a lot of people see, and it's been really sad actually to kind of see the conflation of people who don't have a place to stay inside and crime. It's pretty commonly known that homeless residents are far more likely to be victims of crime than they are to commit crimes. But we see this through, all the same kinds of narratives from elected leaders, the police, and, you know, from other media outlets, and it makes its way into the community so that when people see things like tents and tarps, they immediately associate that. There's this sort of heuristic response as if there's a crime happening. And then when you couple that sort of with, Supreme Court decision saying that it's okay to criminalize homelessness, then homelessness itself kind of does become a crime regardless of, you know, what sort of, like who's being harmed there. And it's unfortunate to kind of see that start to be or continue to be conflated in that way.
But, you know, on that note, I mean, that was like a specific thing Roussel brought up in effort to explain why there is such a huge gap between public perception and what the data actually shows. But you do have that association of homelessness with criminality. So a lot of people will, the more they see tents and tarps, like Jeremiah said, the more they assume that there's crime happening. So when someone tells them there's a crime wave or there's this increase in the crime rate, even if there isn't, they're going to be more likely to believe that. And at least Roussel felt that that, you know, could be a not insignificant part of why this narrative, despite it having very little evidence, has been able to gain such a foothold in Portland.
What are the takeaways that you hope folks get from these stories?
I mean, there's a few. I mean, with it being three stories, I think the big thing to me, just after doing all of this work and going through all this data and talking with experts in the city, and I think there's no real evidence to suggest that Portland is in the grips of a crime wave, nor has there been evidence to support that in the previous 4 years. You know, arrests are down 44% in the last 4 years. Dispatch calls from the public resulting in police being dispatched have gone down in the last 4 years. And I think also, you know, one thing we do talk about, like Jeremiah pointed out, is cherry picking and how, you know, if you zoom in far enough, you can really find, and you're selective enough, you can find data points that support pretty much any conclusion, right? So I think it's also just a helpful reminder that, you know, when you see statistics from the police or from the mayor or from whoever, that, you know, they're comparing 1 month of 1 year to 1 month of another year or 6 months or even year to year, based on what we heard from experts, that, you know, there may be more to the story than you're getting, right? And there may be a very specific reason why those two seemingly arbitrary points are being compared. And I do think that that's something that's worth remembering from this article.
Jeremiah, any takeaways for you?
Well, you know, crime can be sort of a Rorschach test for people, you know, and one of the things that I think is really gratifying in this article is that Kay and I just kind of entered into that looking at, you know, some open PPB data and kind of seeing like, hey, okay, so where are these crimes happening? We keep hearing about it just like everyone else. We live in Portland and, you know, just kind of continued looking at this stuff. And the more we, this was meant to be one story, you know, maybe even a month or two, published a month or two ago. And the more we looked, the more we found, you know, just less evidence that kind of that narrative that we see every day is what's really kind of happening in the world. So I think it's a really interesting story. I hope people dig into these. There's three of them here. And I think speaking with a number of experts and looking at data from kind of all of the different angles, this can be, again, the call volume, this is like the arrests, what types of supposed crimes are being committed, staffing, budgets, kind of hits it from a bunch of different angles. And when it's put under that kind of scrutiny, the narrative really doesn't hold up.
If our listeners are interested in finding these stories for themselves, what's the best way to do that?
The best place to get Street Roots is to buy a copy from a vendor. They're in your neighborhood and they accept cash, Venmo, and tips. And you can also find us at streetroots.org.
Any final thoughts before we wrap up?
Go buy the paper.
There's a lot more that we didn't dare touch in this short of an interview. So thank you guys so much for coming on to talk. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
That was Kay Rambo, editor-in-chief at Street Roots, and Jeremiah Hayden, reporter at Street Roots, talking with me about a trio of new articles out this week, The Great Portland Crime Ripple. More information is online at streetroots.org. For KBOO News in Depth, I'm Althea Billing.
Listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio couldn't do it without you. Support KBOO by becoming a member during our Wake Up the Neighborhood